Support for the Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santikos studio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Remember after the 2020 presidential election, when there were all these Republican claims that the election had been stolen? Donald Trump said there were dead people voting multiple times, non-citizens voting. Rudy Giuliani lied about Georgia election workers Ruby Friedman and her daughter Shay Moss. America's mayor now owes them $148 million in damages after losing a court battle over that. Attorney Sidney Powell promised that she was going to release the Kraken of evidence. But as Arizona House Speaker Rusty Bowers testified at the House Select Committee investigating the January 6th attack, he told Rudy Giuliani told him, "We've got lots of theories, we just don't have the evidence." Well, if you don't have the evidence, then you ain't got nothing. So the Trump campaign went looking for evidence, and they hired Ken Block to find it. He looked, but he says there's none to be found. Block writes about his experience in the new book, Disproven, My Unbiased Search for Voter Fraud for the Trump Campaign, the data that shows why he lost and how we can improve our elections. And Ken Block, welcome to The Source.
David, thank you for having me.
We're going to get to those big three segments that you have there about the lack of evidence, but also, you know, your data that shows why he lost. And we will sequester the last segment just to talk about how we can improve our elections, because all these issues are important. But let's get to the main issue about, you know, was the election stolen or was there evidence to support that? And I do want to let everyone know that our phone lines are open, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Call in with your questions and comments about the election, your doubts, your questions about, you know, whether or not it was stolen. People who think the election was stolen, now's your chance. Call in. Here's a guy that says it wasn't. So the title Disproven, it's a very, I can tell that you really wanted the precise word to describe where you ended up at. Why is disproven the right word?
That's a really great question. It's not one that I've been asked up to this point. It is disproven encapsulates what the findings were and what everybody should understand about what I was asked to do. I was hired by the Trump campaign specifically to look for evidence of enough voter fraud to change the outcome in any of the swing state elections in 2020. Those states being Georgia, Arizona, Nevada, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania. And I was asked to look for evidence of enough deceased voters voting to have changed the course of the election, duplicate voters voting to change the course of the election, any other oddities that we could find in the voting data that would provide direct evidence of fraudulent votes. And while we were doing all of that in what was a very, very tight time frame of 30 days, the campaign was also asking us to evaluate claims of voter fraud that other people were making that came to the campaign's attention for potential use in lawsuits. And over the 30 days immediately after the election, we analyzed about 20 claims of fraud that others had made, and we were able to show in a very rigorous scientific way why each one of those claims was false.
So the idea is that the Trump campaign was unable to prove that the election was stolen. They had no evidence of that. You can't present lawyers... evidence that the election was 100% clean. I mean, that's you only can disprove that it was not stolen.
Right. We found a small number of dead voters. We found a small number of duplicate voters. The lawyers who hired my company to do this work wanted us to perform professional due diligence. Our job was to deliver to the campaign, if it existed, evidence that would hold up in court that showed that one of the election results was changed due to voter fraud. So this was all about being prepared to go to court and to survive legal scrutiny. And there was no evidence that we found that rose to that level that would have changed an election result. And every single one of the claims of fraud that others brought forward, we were able to show the lawyers who were doing their due diligence why those claims were false, and the lawsuits were never filed.
Let's go to a caller. Our number is 833-877-8255, and we have Evan on the line. Evan, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, Ken, quick question. Considering the defeated former president suffered the worst incumbent loss in over 90 years, why do you think he was so effective at selling this lie, exploiting his supporters, and getting so many to believe these wacky, you know, out-of-this-world conspiracy theories to any normal, reasonable person just sounded completely stupid and made up?
Evan, thank you for the call. Ken Block.
Yeah, that's an excellent question, and the answer is actually simple. Conservative media is only broadcasting information that highlights the fact that there was a lot of voter fraud, even though that information in many cases is false. And they decline to, in fact, I've had almost no conservative media coverage of this book. The only Fox interviews I've given have been to local affiliates. Corporate Fox to this point hasn't engaged with me. A conservative website published a hit piece about me and my book. I offered a rebuttal piece to be published, and it was rejected. So I don't think that classifying individuals who are only receiving one set of information as being anything other than misinformed, I don't think that they're necessarily gullible. I don't think that they're crazy or anything else. The problem really is, in today's media environment, media outlets on the left and the right tend to want to provide the information that their audiences want to hear, and they tend to shy away from publishing information that runs contrary to what their audiences want to hear, and that's how you get to where we're at.
But you are a registered Republican, right?
Correct.
And you've ran for office twice, governor of Rhode Island, but you ran under an independent party, the Moderate Party.
In 2010, I ran as a moderate. It was a centrist political party that I started. And in 2014, I ran as a Republican.
All right. So that doesn't give you some, you know, bona fides? You're not a liberal stooge?
Voter fraud. My narrative about voter fraud runs so counter to what most conservative media wants to talk about. It's disqualifying out the gate.
All right. Well, we're going to talk more about it. We're going to get to the facts, the true facts, as they say. And our phone lines are open. If you've got a question, give us a call. 833-877-8255. 833-TPR-TALK. The book is Disproven. Authors Ken Block. And we'll be right back. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, speaking with author Ken Block. He's an expert in data analysis. He was hired by the Trump campaign to find evidence of voter fraud, something that would prove that the election was stolen. He couldn't find it. The name of the book is Disproven, Voter Fraud for the My Unbiased Search for Voter Fraud for the Trump Campaign, the data that shows why he lost and how we can improve our elections. Let's go to a caller, 833-877-8255. Let's go to Davey. And Davey, you're on the air.
Yes. My question is, upon doing this search, was there any evidence of Republicans doing voter fraud, such as deceased people voting, people voting more than once, and not voting in the where they're supposed to vote, the state right. or the country or whatever?
Well, Davey, thanks for that great question. Appreciate it. Ken Block.
Yeah, so in 2020, I personally identified two registered voters in Pennsylvania who were registered to vote in September of 2020, who had been dead for years. I found these voters in October of 2020. Election officials were informed about these deceased registrants. They did end up voting by mail. Those votes did count on election day. After the election was over, election officials removed those registered voters, identified them as deceased, and they ended up prosecuting two individuals for resurrecting deceased relatives and voting in their name. In this circumstance, both of those registered voters were Republicans, who admitted they had resurrected their relatives for the purpose of voting for Donald Trump in 2020. But to be clear, voter fraud is a bipartisan activity. Over the years, the voter fraud that I've identified, especially for duplicate votes, it's pretty evenly split between Democrats and Republicans. The crime of voting twice is much more one of privilege. For those who can afford to own two houses in two different states, those are the people most likely to vote twice if they have active registrations in both state, in both states. I have not seen any evidence anywhere that voter fraud is an activity exclusively conducted by Democrats.
So you bring up this thing about people voting in multiple states. The state of Texas was part of this program called ERIC, which was supposed to share data between states so that that would be more easily caught. After the fallout of the 2020 election and all these claims that the elections are rigged, people, the lawmakers in Texas, Republicans, opted out of ERIC, thinking that they could do it better and cheaper, and they're not able to do that. But so does ERIC work? Is there anything wrong with ERIC and the way it does its job?
That's a loaded question. ERIC, the idea behind ERIC is a sound one. The implementation of how ERIC is doing it, especially historically, has been problematic. ERIC is not just about trying to help clean up the voter rolls. It's also has a secondary purpose that's mandatory for every state that has to deal with registering voters as well. And they really should have kept it to one purpose, kept it really clean. Over the years, ERIC has forced its member states to swear an oath of secrecy about the results that ERIC has. It's really, its evolution has been shaky, and I understand why some states have decided to leave it. In fact, ERIC's even had some pretty bad data breaches over the years. It doesn't make a lot of sense for something as important as cleaning up our voter rolls to be done by a charitable nonprofit. I believe that the right place for this to happen is the federal government, and I think that the Election Assistance Commission is the proper place for an agency to do this work, and every state should be required to participate. So I'd like to see the function that ERIC serves taken over by the EAC and make it mandatory for every state to participate.
So ERIC, not perfect, but the solution that Texas has for it to create its own ERIC, is that better?
No, it's it could be. Right now, every state has its own registration data in a silo, essentially. ERIC is an attempt to get the states to share their data for purposes of cleaning it up. If Texas wants to go it alone, or any other state, it's not just Texas, They have to get data sharing agreements with every other state, and then they need the software to do the work to figure out where you have people who are registered to vote in multiple places. It's not very efficient to have every state try to solve this problem on its own. It's far better to have a federalized system that does this work, so you only have to do the work once.
So you're arguing that it's disproven that the elections were stolen. Does that mean the elections are clean and safe and secure?
That's a really good question. So in my jaded opinion, and everybody has to understand that I am a technology professional. I am a specialist in large database systems, and I have a lot of experience with protecting these systems, and I pay very close attention to data breaches and hacking and all of that kind of thing. There isn't a computer system that's been built that is safe and secure from a hell-bent hacker who's, you know, intent on breaking into that system. So we have states like New York State and Texas and Arizona and Nevada where each county has its own computer system to run elections. The more computers that you have that run your elections, you're increasing the odds that one of those systems will be breached at some point. So anybody who says they have a computer system that is immune to hacking either has no idea what they're talking about or they're living in fantasy land. You can be protected to some extent from hacking, but it's a concern all the way around that a system can be hacked. Now, is there massive fraud happening throughout our election system? The answer to that is an emphatic no. It hasn't been proven. There's not a shred of evidence that's admissible in a court of law that takes us down that road. And that's a really important point that I'm making here. A claim of voter fraud that gets demolished in court as essentially just being a he said, she said type of claim that's called hearsay evidence in our courts of law, or worse, a claim that can't be backed up with any fact, doesn't stand up and gets tossed out of court. And that's largely the reason that 62 court cases in the 2020 aftermath were thrown out of our court systems nationwide. There is no evidence of massive voter fraud, and every claim that's been made, even some of the broadly accepted claims like the 2000 Mules narrative, when push came to shove and the producers of 2000 Mules had to swear in court documents that they had the evidence, their answer was, we don't have the evidence. So that whole movie and all the claims about voter fraud contained in 2000 Mules ended up being hearsay evidence disallowed in any court of law in this country and debunked. And that's what's really hard for conservatives to put their head around is there are so many of these narratives everywhere, few to none of which have any data that back them up, but they hear so many of these claims, they think some of these claims absolutely have to be true. How can it be any other way? But the honest answer is not a single one of them that I've looked at was true, and they were easily demonstrated to be false across the board. There are lawyers who have made a fortune bringing forward these false claims, and that I believe that has been a public relations and legal strategy throughout the 2020 election, was to bring these nonsense claims, not because anyone expected to win in court, but because they just wanted to impugn our election system.
So on to 2000 Mules, a lying documentary film, which was produced and distributed by Texas-based Salem Multimedia Production Company. They've had to pull it from distribution and apologize for a lying about a Georgia voter. And they've had to, you know, in that. But still, the film was shown in the Texas Attorney General's office, Election Protection Office, they're supposed to be looking for voter fraud, and yet they believe 2,000 mules. And they were supporting that, as well as other Texas elected officials and lawmakers. They stand by 2,000 mules. Is that a problem?
Yeah, well, it's a problem, but the 2,000 mules producers, when the time came to put up or shut up in court, they shut up. So they don't have a leg to stand on. They admitted that they don't have any of the evidence necessary to make a compelling case that would be admissible in court. And I believe that they're in trouble in the Georgia lawsuit with facing the possibility of a defamation finding there.
Right.
So, you know, what we're seeing over and over again is that these false claims of fraud are being used for PR purposes. But you're starting to see accountability for these lies. We saw it with Rudy Giuliani, as you'd mentioned when we opened for the Ruby Freeman defamation case. 2,000 Mules is looking at a problem in Georgia with defamation. And Carrie Lake, in her Arizona 2022 Arizona gubernatorial false claims of voter fraud, is also facing a defamation suit for some of her false claims, which she admitted, by the way, were false.
Let's go to a caller. We have Sally, and Sally, you're on the air.
Hi. I was wondering, you've said that you're a large database manager, whether maybe we have our eye on the wrong thing, and how you think that the threat from foreign countries could impact our elections and what we can do to harden our system so that we won't be hacked by North Korea, China, or Russia.
Sally, thank you for the call. And let me amend that. You know, I think that foreign interference, they don't have to change the results of the election. They just have to, like, scramble it so badly that it doesn't even work on election day. And given the temperature in the country, that could be enough to set things off. And your reaction to that?
Yeah, I mean, the one good thing about having so many different election systems in our country. And by the way, most people, if you ask them, how many election systems do we have? Most people would answer, well, 50, one for every state, which is a reasonable guess, but it's quite wrong that we have more than 5,000 election jurisdictions in this country. And many of those jurisdictions have their own computer systems. So for a bad actor to hack many of our election systems would be a tall order, and it would increase the chances that that activity would be found.
Right, but because of how close things are nationally, and we're almost out of time here, I mean, you could just pick a few precincts and you could change national outcomes.
It's pretty hard. From a hacking perspective, it's more likely that they could corrupt the voter registration file, maybe interfere with the activities of election machines on election day. But as far as changing results, I think that's a pretty unlikely way that we're going to see fraud emerge.
All right, we got to take this break. JD, I see you on the board. We'll get you on the air as soon as we come back. Our phone lines are 833-877-8255. We continue our conversation with Ken Block. His book is Disproven: My Unbiased Search for Voter Fraud for the Trump Campaign, the Data That Shows Why He Lost, and How We Can Improve Our Elections when we come back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin. Davies Howell. Safe and secure are our elections. You listen to Donald Trump. When he loses, they're rigged and his elections have been stolen. But is that really the case? The Trump campaign hired Ken Block to look for evidence to support that. And It wasn't there to be found. He wrote the book Disproven, My Unbiased Search for Voter Fraud for the Trump Campaign, the data that shows why he lost and how we can improve our elections. You can call him with your questions and comments for Ken. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK, and J.D. is on the line. J.D., you're on the air.
Yes. As far as this voter fraud, I believe it's a plan by the Republican Party, and it's been around since 10 years before Hillary ever ran for office. They were attacking Hillary with false, with lies and other indications which were not true, and they have continued to do so. They did so with Mr. President Obama and, of course, with President Biden. And they can't win the popular vote. It's very hard for them to win the popular vote. So they have to go around that and make these false accusations. But what that does, they probably know they're going to be found to be false, but they get their people voting and believing all those lies and untruths and everything.
Right, J.D., thank you for that question. So, Ken Block, you were on the inside. Did you ever hear anyone say that this was all just nonsense, but let's keep the game going, let's keep the circus running?
So, I was kept extremely isolated from the rest of the campaign while I did this work in November of 2020. The only campaign official that I spoke with was the lawyer who hired me, whose name was Alex Cannon. Alex and some of the lawyers that he worked with on the campaign were professional. They were doing their due diligence. They told Mark Meadows directly after my work was done that the campaign looked very hard for evidence of voter fraud and found not enough to matter. Mark Meadows accepted that information as true when he heard it. So there were members of the campaign who were doing the right thing, and there were members of the campaign. Well, they weren't really campaign attorneys. So Rudy Giuliani and Sidney Powell and lawyers like that, they were not formally attached to the campaign, at least not while I was working with the campaign in November of 2020. They were doing what they were doing outside of the campaign, but in support of former President Trump.
What about John Eastman?
John Eastman was not on the inside. He was one of the external attorneys as well. And now I did end up evaluating claims that John Eastman made, that Sidney Powell made. And while Rudy Giuliani didn't make one of the claims that I analyzed, he added himself to a lawsuit in Pennsylvania that had some of those claims in there. And I was able to show the attorneys I reported to why the claims from Eastman, Powell, and the Giuliani lawsuit were all false.
Did you ever talk to Mike Lindell, my pillow guy?
I haven't. I would love to have a sit down with Mike Lindell if he allowed me to have an actual conversation with him and talk about real evidence of voter fraud.
He put up a $5 million bounty for anyone who could prove that he was wrong. How come you didn't snatch up that $5 million?
Well, I have a business and employees and customers that we're keeping happy as the years roll by here. So the voter fraud work that I do is important, but it's not my primary source of revenue for my company. So I follow it closely, but I don't really look too hard for a lot of voter fraud related work.
So I have a question, an email question from Richard. Did the Trump campaign pay you for the report?
They did. So there wasn't a single report. All of the work that I did and all of the findings that we delivered were delivered in the moment. So I was asked to evaluate a claim of voter fraud that 750,000 votes in Wisconsin were fraudulent. This is a true life story I'm telling you. 750,000 duplicate votes were cast in Wisconsin. That was the claim. In about a half an hour, I was able to show Alex why that claim was false. That claim came to me through a pretty convoluted path. Some volunteers in Wisconsin misinterpreted the data they were looking at. They got excited. They determined 750,000 votes were fraudulent. They brought those results to a friend of theirs who golfed, who brought it to the manager of a Trump golf course, who brought it to Eric Trump, who brought it to the Oval Office, who gave it to Alex Cannon, who gave it to me. And when he gave it to me, he said, tell me why this is wrong. So, yeah, there were a lot of claims of fraud brought by lawyers like Eastman and Powell, brought by people outside any lawyer working on the campaign. People were trying as hard as they could to provide the proof to the empty claim that there was voter fraud. There was, I would call it, a mania going on in the country at that time. And very few people understood the data they were looking at. The lawyers who brought the false claims are all now being subjected to professional jeopardy because of the manner in which they brought those claims forward, and whether they even, some of them even knew some of these claims were false to begin with. And in my little protected bubble, there was no talk about a bigger plan where the idea was just to keep throwing claims of voter fraud against the wall, the hopes to see whether some of them stick. I wasn't part of that effort. I was part of the effort to unstick those claims as they were attached to the wall. I don't doubt for a second, though, that there were lawyers circulating around the campaign whose mission was just to keep throwing as many things against the wall as they could.
So in the second part of your book, you look at the data that shows why he lost. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I'm going to give you the Reader's Digest version of it. I arrived at a finding which was the same finding that Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger arrived at, which was also the same finding that Trump's own pollster arrived at in December of 2020. And what that, the reason for Trump's loss in the swing states, in most of the swing states, was because of moderate Republican voters. Trump denigrated these voters. He called them rhinos. He made it very clear he didn't want their support. He thought they were subhuman people, and they didn't vote for him. And there weren't a lot of rhinos. Maybe they were 3% of the voting population in Georgia, for example. But 3% of all registered voters in Georgia is a pretty big number, more than 100,000 votes. And Trump lost by less than 12,000 votes in Georgia. I can show you the rhino votes across the country. Trump did about 2.5% less well in 2020 than he did in 2016, and that is largely the rhinos. Raffensperger in Georgia found 30,000 Republican primary voters who didn't vote in the presidential election, 30,000. Those voters were probably rhinos who voted against Trump in the primary and couldn't bring themselves to go vote in the November general election. Raffensperger also found another 30,000 votes in Georgia where the voter elected down-ticket Republican candidates but left the presidential race blank. Those are also very likely rhinos.
You know, the word rhino, I know you're using their language to make the point, but these are people who are really, they're true conservatives.
Right. These are, the rhino is Republican in name only. And these are Rockefeller Republicans. These are country club Republicans. These are fiscally conservative Republicans who don't buy into MAGA, don't buy into the culture wars, right? I mean, you know, to call someone a Republican is or a Democrat, honestly, these days, it doesn't do justice to tell you what that person really thinks, because there's an awful lot of flavors of both Republican and Democrat. So any non-MAGA Republican in Trump's eyes is a rhino, Republican in name only, and he lost their support. His pollster exit interviewed 30,000 voters in the swing states on election day in 2020. One-sixth of those voters identified as Republicans who voted against Trump. That's just a huge finding, and that's the margin of victory. That explains Pennsylvania. That explains Arizona, Georgia, and Wisconsin. His loss in those states is easily explained because he didn't want Rhino support, and the Rhinos didn't support him.
Well, he's saying the same thing again now. You think they'll have the same outcome in 2024?
This race is so complicated, and it's not complicated for the reason. I mean, what makes this race so complicated is if it was the same as 2020, yes, Trump would be in deep trouble right now. But one complication is that Biden has lost the support of young progressives due to the Israel-Gaza conflict. Both candidates have little appeal to anybody under the age of 40 at this point. Young voters don't have anything in common with these old men at this point. And honestly, the first of these candidates to fall down and break a hip on TV is the one who's going to lose.
Okay. Well, hopefully no one does that, but I get your point. We got to take this other break. We'll come back and we'll talk about how we can improve our elections. 833-877-8255. That's the number to call with your questions for Ken Block. The book is Disproven. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. We're joined by Ken Block. His book is Disproven, My Unbiased Search for Voter Fraud for the Trump Campaign, the Data That Shows Why He Lost, and How We Can Improve Our Elections. So let's get to that last point that you make, the last part of the book. So the elections, they need to be improved?
Oh, we should absolutely improve our elections. I believe that we have very unfair, uneven elections. Not that they're not because they're rigged and due to voter fraud, but because we Republicans and Democrats collectively have built a system that when they hold the reins of power in a particular state, they do everything they can to hold on to that power. And some of the things they do include things like gerrymandering districts, creating rules and regulations that make it really hard for other political parties to gain any traction. When partisan elected officials hold office, they would like very much to see no competition as much as they can. And we really largely have a non-competitive election system. In Congress, more than 80% of legislative seats in Congress are not competitive. We know what party is going to win those seats, regardless of who the candidates are. And that's why we get more extreme representation in Congress, and that's why the level of partisanship has gone up so high. I believe that gerrymandering across the country should be made illegal. I believe that we should create, as we discussed earlier in this conversation, we should do away with ERIC and the function that ERIC serves in terms of helping to clean up the voter rolls. That should be done by the Election Assistance Commission, and everybody should have to participate in that. But we even have a lot of transparency problems with the data in our country. While New York and Florida and California provide their voter rolls for free or maybe $25, state of Alabama charges $37,000 for its election data. And the state of Massachusetts doesn't make their election data available to anybody who's a member of the public. So we have transparency problems, and the best election systems are those that are transparent. We have awful data problems. The state of New Jersey has 25,000 voters who are registered to vote with a year of birth of 1800, 1800. You heard that right. 8,000 of those voters cast a vote in the 2000 election. Which is impossible.
Nobody, so explain that. So are these just like, are they bots or something? What's that?
Nope. It's sloppy data. Election workers didn't know the date of birth of those voters. And that's how the computer system represents not knowing what the date of birth is. It's just 1800. So it's not voter fraud, but it's incredibly sloppy, harmful computer systems. And election officials aren't doing their job to clean that up. New York State has a similar problem with its data. I mean, you and I could talk for 5 hours about the various problems that different states have when it comes to their voter data, access to their data, and things that they should be doing better. I mean, honestly, I think we should do away with the idea of voter registration by the states. We should have a federal voter registration system. So you register to vote once on a federal level, and that would do away with duplicate registrations in all the various states. And let's be honest, you know, most of the intensity in our elections comes from the federal races. So we should register federally. In fact, I would argue that you should be given a voter registration the day you're born here or you're naturalized here. It should just be automatic. You shouldn't have to do anything to be able to vote. The Constitution doesn't say you have to do something to be able to vote other than to be a citizen and be of age. So I think that we could simplify everything, make everything work dramatically better by doing away with state-based voter registration systems, federalizing the function, making it simpler, and eliminating so many of the integrity problems that exist today.
Let's go to caller Rick. And Rick, you're on the air.
Hi. Mr. Block, I really like that idea that you have about federalizing it, making it, you know, instantaneous. My question is, look, both of our most disastrous presidents, Bush and Trump, lost the popular vote and were installed by the Electoral College. So do you think doing away with the Electoral College would reduce voter fraud and fraudulent claims of voter fraud?
Rick, thank you for the call. Ken Block?
Yes. Thank you. No, I don't think that claims of voter fraud or actual voter fraud that gets committed doesn't have anything to do with the existence of the Electoral College or not. I understand why the Electoral College was put into place. The founders wanted to ensure that smaller rural states had a say in the outcome of our elections. To change the Electoral College requires a constitutional amendment. And given the makeup of our states and how many states are red and how many are blue, I don't think we would ever see a successful attempt at making that amendment to our constitution to do away with the Electoral College. So I get the sentiment behind it. If a majority of voters in the country want a person A to be president, how can we have an outcome of anything other than A? However, the Electoral College does make that a reality, and I don't see how we're ever going to be successfully get ourselves away from that model. It's too hard politically to do.
Let me ask you about voter ID. You support voter ID, right?
I do. Done right, it's a very common sense way to ensure that the people who are voting are who they say they are.
Right. So when you say done right, so when people say, I support voter ID, and you throw it out there, like, but there's lots of ways to do voter ID. And the way that we have it in Texas, it's a photo voter ID, and they have very limited in which forms of identification can be used. And so which you can't use like a college ID, you can't use a public housing identification card, but you can use a concealed handgun license, things like that. It seems, you know, what forms of identification that are allowed seem to be skewed towards certain types of voters. And when some people talk about voter ID in other states, they're thinking about, well, you can bring a mail that was sent to your house with your name and your address on it, and that would count as voter ID. So what kind of voter ID would you want?
Yeah. So it has to be a form of, if we're going to do it right, it has to be a form of ID that can't be easily faked. So in Rhode Island, you can use a utility bill. You can use your electric bill as a form of ID. But I did this. I scanned my electric bill, and then just using Adobe Photoshop without doing anything other than typing, I was able to change the name on my electric bill to somebody else and save it, and you would never be able to tell the difference. So is that an effective form of identification for the purposes of confirming the voters who they say they are? Absolutely not.
Well, before you go any further on that, let me just ask you the question. Is there a problem of people misrepresenting themselves with different identifications at the polls? Is that a problem?
So it's really hard to say. It's hard to say in a general response because every state and many counties in the same state do things differently. So I can't give you a pat answer for that. But what I'll tell you is that in many countries around the world, you do have to provide a strong form of identification to vote. In fact, most first world countries, certainly every country in Europe, have a national identifier. In fact, most of those national identifiers are biometric in nature. Everybody has them. So when I'm talking about doing something right, I'm talking about the need. We need to do some things here. I mean, we use Social Security numbers kind of sort of as a national identifier. The problem is the hackers have everybody's Social Security number many times over at this point. It's not secure. We need to do away with Social Security numbers. We need a replacement for them. I believe we should have a national identifier for voting. It should be biometric in nature, just like most of the other developed countries have done at this point. And it's doable. It's been done. It works. And that's really the way to do it. And I there's other than inertia, I don't understand why this country has such a problem putting their head around the idea of doing something like this when it's been done successfully in so many other places.
In the Constitution, it says that the states are in charge of elections. Could that be the problem?
Well, it's not. Congress, and this is where I'll chuckle before I say it, Congress has the ability and the right under the Constitution to pass laws that govern how we conduct elections. So, and they've done so in the past, and at some point in the future, they'll probably be able to do so again. Probably not right now. I think that we need to consider a big overhaul. We're running our elections the way we did 200 years ago. And I can tell you without hesitation that were we to have built from scratch an election system today to serve the needs of our country, there's no way we would have built from scratch what we are dealing with now. We would have done it very differently, and I think we should do it differently, and we should modernize our systems.
I want to thank you, Ken Block. Thank you for coming on the air. Thank you for writing this book and talking to us and walking us through this very technical book. Answers a lot of questions that people have, allegations, stuff they made up, shoots it down, shows you that the election's pretty clean, pretty secure, stuff we can be proud of, but we can do better. The name of the book is Disproven, My Unbiased Search for Voter Fraud for the Trump Campaign, the data that shows why he lost, and how we can improve our elections. Ken Block, so good to talk to you today.
Thank you, David, for having me.
And that's The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted and produced by David Martin Davies. Kayla Padilla is our booking and engagement producer. Engineering support from Ruben Garcia, Jesse Reeves, and Steve Short. Dan Katz is TPR's Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.